You want to go to the game, Deej?
Next week in Hamilton?
Yeah.
Not really.
Thanks. See, I reach out and extend an olive branch to you, hang out, be buddies outside of work, and you see how fast you turn me down?
I'm moving.
That's embarrassing.
I've got priorities.
I'm embarrassed.
Welcome to The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
That's right. This is The Waggle Podcast. And fans, this podcast, each and every week, is brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips, known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience, massaging shampoos, hot steam towels, sports on TV, football, hockey, baseball, basketball, but most importantly, football. Oh, that's right. And legendary haircuts and sports. You can now book your appointment online at sportclips.ca. That's sportclips.ca. This is the Waggle Podcast, and it's brought to you by us here at the CFL.ca, and really, myself, Donovan Bennett, and Davis Sanchez.
Hey, DJ.
You need some sport clips in your life today, don't you?
I may have missed a spot on my head when I was leaving this morning, and DJ was so nice to point it out. I'm pretty sure he's going to post it somewhere on social media.
No,
but there is a mohawk type stripe on the back of my head. But
this is why you hire help.
Stuff happens.
For sport clips. I'm moving this week, and I have many philosophies in life. One of them is friends don't ask friends to move. They don't ask them to help them move. Hire some movers.
Is that actually a philosophy of yours?
Yeah, because you know who likes moving? Nobody. So why would you inflict that pain on other people? And so I'm derailing the podcast early to say, just hire some help. Go to Sport Clips. It's very affordable, cost effective. They'll take care of you. You don't have to be looking behind you in your mirror to see if you got the card swipe in the back of your head clean. No, just go to Sport Clips. Watch some sports. Take your mind off all of the things going on in your life.
This is incredible, because this is honestly incredible. We've only been together for a few months, but the reason why the chemistry is just so lovely.
It's because I didn't ask you to help me move this week.
DJ, that is one of like my three top life philosophies. Ask any of my boys. You could ask them what's like Chez's number one rule. It's going to be in the top three. Their answers will be he doesn't ask anyone to help move, and he doesn't want help moving. That's like one of my philosophies, because, well, one of the reasons I hate moving.
Oh,
secondly, I'd rather just get someone. I'd just rather hire someone, so I don't have to spend 6 weekends a year helping everyone else move. I've had this conversation many a time. So that's why we mesh, buddy.
Well,
you know who doesn't mesh? The Alouettes and Kavis Reed.
Ooh,
that was a DJ type segue.
Because I was gonna say, you know who might be hiring some movers?
Oh, good, even better.
Kavis Reed. In the event that you were up at a cottage or away and you missed the weekend of the CFL, we're going to update you on all the news. But there was some news off of the field in the office that dropped Sunday morning. That's Kavis Reed and the Alouettes have parted ways. And, Davis, I was legitimately excited to come on here and talk positively about the Montreal Alouettes. They're 2-2. They're playing well. I, for one, have crushed them throughout the offseason. And they just cannot have nice things, evidently. When it should be a positive story, we have to touch on the negative. And we're going to get to how well they're playing on the field. But for those who missed it, Kavis Reed is out as GM. There's lots of different reports as to what has happened. The one thing that we do know, and the one thing that they did say in the press conference, is that this decision is not performance related. So the homie Didier.
Why? Because it would have been, if it was performance related, he would have got a contract extension?
Well, you could make an argument if it was going to be performance related, he would have been fired a while ago. But if anything, the timing, they're 2-2 now. They're just coming off the best performance of the year, to then wake up and get rid of the GM based on performance, the timing would have been odd. But the homie Didier in Montreal, doing great work for RDS, he tweeted, "It's just based on things that were brought to my attention." Or sorry, this is Patrick Boivin said in the press conference, "It's just based on things that were brought to my attention over the course of the last couple of weeks. it made it such that we had to act upon it now. We came across some information and simply decided this was the time to make the move. I'm not going to add any more to it. Well, Twitter fingers will add more to it, because when you leave it open-ended like that without concrete information in terms of why you've come to this resolution, some people will speculate, some people will report. Stu Cowan from the Montreal Gazette has done some digging. And this, I don't necessarily know if it would be related, but it's just interesting. He wrote that the Gazette learned in January that Reed had not paid a landlord $6,200 in rent between September and December, was taken to court for it. And although the Alouettes were not named in the settlement, a quote-unquote football club was referred to on each date of the case. Multiple reports, and I referenced the homie Didier, Matthew Prue, has said similar things, hearing the same thing from multiple sources. Cavis Reed came up with a system to circumvent the salary cap. He was also caught charging the Alouettes for personal expenses such as plane tickets. So there's a lot there.
How else is he supposed to fly to the game? Pay his own way? Drive a car?
Yeah. I mean,
no, I'm sure they weren't. These weren't game flights. But anyway, these are all speculation.
I've always wondered how the books were kept on that. You know, what is a scouting trip, and then what is a trip back home to wherever your place of residence
is? Do you want
to
know?
I do.
If you have a company card and you expense things, when you go home, you definitely go and see a kid and watch a game and file a report on it. And then when you go out for dinner with your aunt and your uncle and your parents and whoever else, you could expense it. But you have to go and send a report back on that kid. Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Right. Matthew Prue said sources told him Cavis Reed was paying players who have personal registered companies. Those players were paying other players. Envelopes were going around for players who need to be paid more money to get around the cap. So basically, it was like the program. It was like blue chips. There's a lot there.
How do you feel about that?
I feel like that's not a one-man job. I feel like if that were to happen, more than Cavis Reed would know about it, unless Cavis Reed is so papered up that he's paying people literally out of his own pocket.
He wants to win so badly that he's paying it out of his own pocket. I don't think so.
Yeah, no. And listen, this is a conversation we have in the NBA in terms of tampering, and you look at players like Kawhi Leonard leaving over $100 million on the table. What would motivate someone to do that? Well, if you know that Steve Ballmer owns multiple companies and that your homie or uncle or you in the future could get a job for those companies, you just need a job. You just need to be in the org chart. Who knows what you're being paid and what work you're doing? How do you keep that stuff off the books? It's been speculated for a long time that the reason why Dirk Nowitzki continued to take hometown discounts is because Mark Cuban says, I got you when you're done. I got you. And how do you police that? It's tough. Adam Silver has come out and said, we shouldn't have rules that we can't police. And I think those things happen on two ends of the spectrum. When a lot of money is being made in the NBA, or when not as much money is being made in the CFL, thus, a little bump on the side goes a long way. And if someone has a company that is a personal training company or a construction company, and you're saying, oh, they're doing some work for the Alouettes, they're training our dance pack or our players that we're bringing up for rookie camp. Well, who determines what that rate is in a free market system?
Repeat what Adam Silver said. We shouldn't have rules
that we cannot enforce.
That makes sense. How can you, to your Dirk Nowitzki or what possibly happened to Kawhi, or, you know, I've been around the league a long time. I've heard lots about guys having off-season jobs or companies that are friendly with the organization, giving people promotional money, things of that nature. You can't police that. You can't stop a guy if company X wants to give me money in the off-season or during the season to go show up for a dinner or show up at an event, and they pay me $10 or $10,000, and that just happens to be a wink, wink, nudge, nudge with the team to get me an extra $50,000, There's no way to patrol that. There's no way you can. There's no way you can control it or patrol it. And this is, I mean, now if you're handing over, you know, if you're paying companies, this is like we say. I'll repeat this again. This is speculative, and what is some of the things that we're hearing, and have not been confirmed. If it's true that they're paying players to their companies, and these players are now paying other people, then that's different because that's through players, and that is definitely easy to track that, and there's, you know, a direct link to something that's not right, and it's clear cut.
But the point is, as it stands right now, the Alouettes no longer have a GM, and you could make the case based on performance that they wouldn't have a GM outside of this year. In 2017, they were 3-15. That was fourth in the division. 2018, they're 5-13, third in the division. This year, they're 2-2 and tied for second in the division. So trending in the right way, but the large sample is not good. And when he was a head coach, he being Cavis Reed, 2017, after taking over for Jacques Chaptelain, he led the team to a mighty 0-7 record. So you could say on that alone why Patrick Pauvin informed Cavis Reed on Sunday morning he no longer has a job. Thus, Joe Mack takes over. He most recently held a GM job with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. That's the Blue Bombers team that went to the Grey Cup in 2001. He was subsequently fired the next season. This is all, you'd think, a placeholder situation until there's a new ownership group and they can do whatever they want. And I want to address something that was rumored and also speculated that to me doesn't make any logical sense, that, oh, well, this is just doing some dirty work for the potential ownership group that might come in. And now they've got a clean slate. If the new owners, who may or may not have an idea on who they want to run their football ops, if they wanted to get rid of Cavis Reed, wouldn't they just do it when they took over? Was there going to be a huge backlash from the fans in Montreal?
No.
Hell no. Cavis can't go. Hell no. Cavis can't go. I don't think that would have been an issue. So from a PR standpoint, I don't think they needed someone to get ahead of it for them.
Do it one more time.
Hell no. Cavis can't go. I don't think there'd be people picketing outside of Percival Molson because the new ownership group got rid of the staff that's in place right now. So I don't think that would have been an issue. If anything, you just want one story. New ownership coming in with the new front office. You don't want to continually have multiple negative headlines around your franchise. That's PR 101. So from that standpoint, I don't think that makes any sense. But most importantly, when you heard this, because on the field they're playing well, when you heard this news on Sunday, what was the first thing that came to your mind?
That the first thing that came to my mind was that a new group had taken over. That's what I thought when I heard that.
So you thought the deal was done?
Yeah, well, because to your point, whoever is taking over was going to get rid of the people there regardless. Right. And whoever is taking over will get rid of the people that are there. Now, that doesn't mean Kahari, because Kahari seems like he's well, first of all, he is respected. And then it seems like he has a good thing going with the room. It's just a small sample here, but it feels like that from when I watch. So he might stick. But anyone else, you know, that the Cavis and the personnel department, those guys will be gone regardless of who takes over. So who cares? To your point, that makes zero sense. Funny story, actually. I was Sunday morning. I was doing a beach day. I worked the rest of the weekend. I was working, and so Sunday morning I decided to have a family day. Got up, packed up the wagon, went down to Woodbine Beach and had everything all set up out there. And I get a call from the office here, asking if I can talk Cavis Reed, and this is after the Owls win. So I had not looked. You know, one of the things that we try to do when I'm off is put the phone away and put the computer away and not be plugged into Twitter or whatever else is going on. So I didn't realize that Cavis had been fired. I just thought they wanted me to talk to Kavis about the Owls turn around and they're 2-2 and Vernon Davis or Vernon Adams. So in my head, with the first, you asked the first thing I thought, oh yeah, great Kavis. Now Kavis wants to do interviews now because he won two games. Now he wants to go, come out in the media and they want to interview him and pump him up. I'm thinking in my head. So anyway, politely said, I can't make it today. I can't do it. I'm not available. I'm on my off day. And then a few hours later, I see that Kavis had been fired and they weren't looking to do a piece on the Owls' great turnaround, but more to talk about what just happened to my former team's head coach or my former team's general manager. Anyway, my bad to my guy KS because I didn't really know what was going on. That was my first thought.
The positive news for Alouettes fans, if you're still listening, is that you may have stumbled onto something here. Kari Jones is calling great games, and Vernon Adams Jr. looks like the guy that Jim Pop thought he might be when he originally brought him to Montreal in the first place. He made his third straight start for Antonio Pipkin, 23 of 30, 327, two TDs passing, two TDs rushing, and maybe the stop on a dime move of the year.
What?
It was nice.
That was legit.
It was nice. Yeah. Montreal QBs since 2016. As you continue to look for someone to take the mantle and not make people forget about Anthony Calvillo, but at least get excited about someone else. Since 2016, Vernon Adams Jr. started 7 games for the Owls. He's won 5, lost 2. His win percentage is 7-1-4. All other QBs have started 51 games. They've won 12, lost 39. 2.35 win percentage. Have the Owls found their QB of the future?
Have they?
I mean, I kind of think so. I kind of think so.
What makes you feel like Vernon Adams' performance is not just a one-off or a two-off?
He was going against a decent enough defense in Ottawa. Put up 36.
I'm not saying it is. I'm just wondering what would make somebody think it's any different than Cody Fajardo having a great game or Dom Davis having a great game and then not following up with it.
Yeah, we need to talk Dom Davis. The thing I am most impressed about Vernon Adams Jr. is decisiveness. And that's why I think Kari Jones deserves some of the credit because he is getting into his drop with authority, and it's, I'm here, nope, I'm off it, I'm here, nope, I'm off it, I'm tucking, I'm running, right? Like, there's no guessing, what am I seeing, I'm not sure.
There's no sense of uncertainty, he's being decisive with his decisions, and that's key for confidence for the group, even us, like to your point, watching it, you feel confident in what he's doing because of that. Here's a question for you. What's Vernon Adams' record as a starting quarterback?
I don't know.
You would be really surprised. It's 5-2 as a starter. 5-2. He might have the best winning percentage of any quarterback. I bet you he has it. I bet there's only 4 quarterbacks in the league right now that have a better winning percentage than Vernon Adams.
Yeah, well, then all his starts then have come with Montreal because he's 5-2 with Montreal. So I did not know.
He was 3. He started off 3-0.
Well, that'll help. I'm really cautiously optimistic is the way I describe it with what I'm seeing from Adams Jr. But I think if you're an Alouette fan, you should be really excited because, I mean, he's played better than Pipkin has played, whether it's this year or last year. He's played better than anybody's played since they had Anthony Calvillo.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Who's the quarterback who played better?
Money Manziel.
Oh, okay. All right. are you going to be caping for Darian Durant? Is that what I'm going to hear? Player who didn't play well in that game, Dominique Davis. 23 of 37, 268 yards and an INT. 7 INTs this season, and this is what is concerning. Most in the CFL. He hasn't gotten better with time. It's kind of like he's plateaued, and if anything, has gotten a little bit worse.
Well, I mean, we can't. What is time here? I mean, it's
a month.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I don't really expect a quarterback to get better in a month. But, yeah, it's he's in a situation where they're not – they have nowhere else to go. So he's going to get the reps, the starts. Jonathan Jennings is not the answer at this point.
Is he at any point?
I mean, I give –
like, how low would it have to go?
If you decided out of camp that Dom Davis was your guy, there's a reason for that. He needs – if you think he has all the physical tools – remember, you went through a lot. You changed your offense. You changed your offensive coordinator. You lost a ton of pieces. Best receiver, running back, left tackle. I mean, we know the story. You have to give this guy a chance to, you know, you've given him a chance, but I think he needs to play a lot of football, and you roll with him. You made him the guy coming out of camp for a reason, and so I think you stick with him.
Short-term pain, long-term gain.
Yeah. How about Lewis Ward, though?
About him.
Like, I mean, he's hit how many straight field goals? 50-something straight field goals for Lewis Ward. Like, that is absolutely insane. Like, it's this kid is impressive. There's the conversation. Here, how about this? Because right now he has the longest streak in football history, field goals made. Should that be a stat that we talk about?
Probably. And you know what? I don't think he plays his games in a stadium where it's the easiest to kick either.
So that's the question. So is it fair for us to say he has the all-time longest streak in pro football? Meaning you compare it with other leagues? Meaning the NFL, really? Is that a fair – I had an argument with or a conversation with someone else last week about that. Like, why do we put that graphic up that says it's all-time football? Like, why not just this league? Is it – because you don't put all-time rushers up there or leading interceptors.
That's true. That started really with Damon Allen, right? And his passing yards.
Yeah.
That's the first time I remember hearing that.
Me too.
Vernacular.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
let us know what you think about that.
Yeah.
I think that's
because there's some guys who have played in both leagues. Right?
Sure. But do we compare, you know, all is Damon Allen the all-time, is it fair to say Damon Allen is the all-time leading passer in pro football? You could say it, but is that, you know, can you compare two leagues? Well, he only has three downs or, you know, there's more room on the field for him to throw away. You know, in the kicking situation, I always say, I don't think, so my answer is no. You can't compare the two. Not that it takes anything away from any of the achievements of either side, but why would you compare the two? It's a different league, different rules. It makes no sense to say that. The only thing I always said was kickers. You could, because you're not playing against anybody but yourself. You're kicking it through the uprights. So it's the rules are the same. But
the hashes are different.
The hashes are different, and we kick off a tee here. So the fact that you kick off a tee changes the kick.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're a place kicker, theoretically, you're getting on average more opportunities in the CFL just because we have less downs,
and more offense. Yeah,
that
so it's well, but more chances doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to make them all. But when you're off a tee, that makes a difference.
That's true. The offense for Montreal looking really good, and we knew their defense would be good because they have a bunch of playmakers there, but. Stand back again, 18 carries, 100 yards. Listen, Alouette fans, you should feel like you should big up your chest. In their last 13, dating back to last year, they're 6-7. Like they're not as bad as I said they were going to be, and as the Toronto Argonauts have been.
The power rankings would agree with you, DJ. We have from last week, the Owls were 7th. Last week in the CFL.ca power rankings, they've now moved up to 5 with 2-2. They're ahead. And who would have guessed this? After 5 weeks of the season, the Ottawa Redblacks, the BC Lions, and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders are all behind the Montreal Alouettes in the power rankings. Toronto also, but people might have, you know, thought that was a possibility. Ottawa, Mike Riley and the BC Lions, and the great Saskatchewan Roughriders, all behind the lowly Alouettes in the power rankings.
Lowly.
Well, that would be the story going into the season.
It's
different now. I feel like there's some optimism with the football team now. There is. Vernon Adams has brought that. William Stanback, the way he's running the ball, he's on pace right now to break the single-season rushing record. It's early, but he's on pace. Vernon Adams has a special skill set when it comes to a quarterback and his elusiveness in the pocket. And Levels and Tommy Campbell, guys that played for the Calgary Stampeders and won a lot of football games, they brought an attitude to that defense, along with Taylor Loeffler and Enoch Mwamba. I think they're a different team. I really do.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Campbell sets the tone in that game, starts it off, first pass, picks it off. Loeffler setting the tone in the middle of the field, making big hits at the safety spot. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Can we talk about that pick for a quick second?
Sure, talk to me.
So that was cover two. This is a real game of cat and mouse, a quick game of cat and mouse between Tommy Campbell and Dominic Davis. Dominic Davis made the right read. In cover two, the corner's low. The halfback goes high.
Mm-hmm.
So the corner's low, the halfback's high. What's always open in cover two is the slot receiver on a quick curl.
Mm-hmm.
That's his read. As soon as he sees that halfback bail out and go high up top, that second receiver sits down right there. They throw the quick hook. As soon as Dom Davis drops back, sees the half go high, he throws that because he sees Tommy Campbell sitting low, sees the halfback go high. But what did Tommy Campbell do? Dominic Davis knows that. Tommy Campbell knows that Dominic Davis knows that. As soon as the ball was snapped and the half went high, Tommy Campbell left the outside short area where he was and ran into the slot and picked off the ball. That was it was just a smart heads-up play, a little cat and mouse between the quarterback who knows what's open versus cover two. The curl is open versus cover two. Tommy Campbell knows that the curl is open in cover two, baited him, jumped it, made a nice play.
Yeah, I mean, all cover two isn't created equal. It depends who's playing it. One, I mean, cover two hang is probably the most difficult coverage for Americans to really reconcile. But to your point, and I love guys who are not just looking to execute what's drawn up. They're looking to make plays. And you've brought this up before, that when you're grading a player, you know, someone could just do their job. Okay, you didn't make a mistake. You grade out. We give you a one, not a zero. But then there's other guys who say, no, I'm going to make a play. So if you're a corner and you're in cover two and nothing's threatening you in front of you, go make a play. Don't just take up oxygen on the field. Go make a play. And that's what Campbell has done ever since he's been in the league.
Let's clarify something to our to our varsity listeners. We know cover two in the CFL is not too high. When I say Tommy Campbell's playing cover two, I really just mean he's a low zone defender with a high defender. There's not too deep in like a traditional American football. Yes. When I say cover two, there's two high safeties. In the CFL, there's probably going to be three or four high players, but Tommy Campbell was a low defender, which means the halfback is a high defender, which means that hook zone is wide open. Dom Davis saw it, and Tommy Campbell, I saw right away on the TV replay. I said, dang, why did he throw that? What happened? And then when I saw the replay, that is a heads-up play.
Right.
Yeah, I saw him trying to do it again later in the game. Tommy, the same thing. So it's obviously something he must do often is try to sneak over and get that.
Yes, cover two in the CFL is vastly different than cover two in American football. We're not talking about the Tampa two where your linebacker and safety is getting crazy depth. But we do have to talk about BC. And this was a tough draw for them. They got Edmonton coming off a bye.
Yes.
We knew Edmonton matched up really well in terms of their front four, front seven against BC's offensive line that's really struggling. And first time they played, Riley got sacked seven times a week too. So you think they're going to clean that up? Protection is going to be key this week in practice. Five sacks in the first half. Same thing. Where does BC go from here? I mean, Riley hasn't been great, and he wasn't great in this game. 17 of 26, 157 yards with an INT. He's now 0-2 already against his old team in Edmonton. held under 200 yards in both games and sacked a total of 12 times. But they're not getting anything really from anybody on offense. Jaron Carter has been targeted 40 times, which is second in the league. He's only got 205 yards receiving, which is 22nd in the league. That's not a good ratio. And he only has only one catch over 30 yards, zero TDs. This offense, I thought, on paper, was going to look really, really good, and it just hasn't.
I didn't think offensively they were going to be great, because the only thing they really have was Mike Riley. Not the only thing they have, but what their big improvement was Mike Riley. I mean, where else?
But that's a big improvement. It's the most important position. Yeah, and fair enough. You can make an argument he is the best 1A, 1B at the position. He's being paid the most.
Well, there's an argument. There's an argument. I forget who was saying it, but it's a good argument. And that is the Edmonton Eskimos didn't make the playoffs last year. Who has a better roster, the Eskimos last year or the Lions right now? It's likely the Edmonton Eskimos. And so why would it be any different? Why did everybody think it was going to be different? I'll be honest. I said that the Lions would struggle to start off with. I was not struggle, but I thought they would take time to gel. I want to be as hype as everyone else with the Riley coming in, just because it's good for football in BC. And I think, you know, the Lions fans needed something to be excited about. Quietly or not so quietly, but I chose my words carefully. But I believe that it would take time for this team to gel and come together. They wouldn't be good from the start, because the roster just doesn't look like it's a team that's going to be great from day one. I mean, I didn't think that the Eskimos were going to be as good as they were either. So,
I mean, I think it starts and ends, and most conversations in this sport do for me, with the offensive line or lack thereof. Riley's been sacked 17 times. That's more than any other QB in the league. He's on pace to be sacked 61 times. That's a guy who's being paid a lot of money, and he's taking a lot of hits. He only has 5 TD passes in 5 games. Puts him on pace for 18, one a game. Over the last 2 years, both years, he threw for 30. And I don't. Offensive line is not necessarily a position that you can rectify with Labor Day, NFL cuts, like you can maybe your secondary or wide receiver core. Good point. So I just don't know how this gets better. They've tried to go a little bit more quick game in terms of, you know, 3-step drops and getting the ball out of his hand.
They've gone more John White. Their second week butt kicking by Edmonton. They gave the ball to John White a lot more since then.
And it's putting a Band-Aid on what is a bigger problem. And, you know, and another thing that it's done is it's taken his yards per attempt down to 7.5, which is, you know, lower than any of his in Edmonton. What I loved about him in Edmonton was he was reading high-low. He was looking to push the ball down the field, looking for a reason. And then, fine, I'll check it down if I have to. He doesn't have time to do that. So it's like he's not even really being himself. I'm really surprised how bad they've looked on offense. I mean, Quietus kept the one win they have was against the Argos, and really they were kind of lucky to get that win.
They should have lost that game. How about they go into the locker room at halftime? It's 16-3. They go in the locker room. They get a Gatorade bucket toss and a slam the locker from the head coach, and let's go out in the second half and let's give it to them. And on the second play of the first drive of the second half, the 75-yard bomb, or 75-yard basically screen to Nataya Jay, who takes it to the house.
And shouts out his baby mama.
That was it. That was the punch in the gut. Right when that happened, it's over. It's over. The team's done. There's no way you can bounce back from that.
I need to apologize to you.
Talk to me.
Earlier this season on this podcast, I said that although Trevor Harris's numbers are nice, Jeremiah Masoli, the degree of difficulty of what he's doing at this point right now is better than any other quarterback in the league. Now, just a couple weeks later, after four games, I was incorrect. Trevor Harris is doing the damn thing. In another nice game. He's only one of only two QBs to have not thrown an interception.
Masoli's numbers are still actually pretty nice, but I'm with you. Right now, I say Trevor Harris is my leading candidate for MOP.
MOP.
But Masoli's numbers, they were first in offense going into this week.
I thought he got off to a real hot start last year in Ottawa, Trevor Harris, put him early into the contention for MOP. What he's doing to start this year is obliterating that. In the first four games last year, he threw for 915. This year, 1,362 yards in four games. He completed 62.8% in his first four last year, 73.1% this year. TDs 5 last year, 8 this year. INTs 4 last year, 0 this year. Wow,
that's the one.
That's the
zero. 1,362 yards, 8 touchdowns, 0.
And 3 rushing TDs. His career high is 5,116 yards. I mean, listen, it's super early. He's got to stay healthy. They have to continue to play well. But he could smash
Matt Nichols has 10 touchdowns, 1 interception.
It's true. But Trevor Harris has thrown for, a third more yards than Matt Nichols
has? Yeah. Double at least.
Shout out to Trevor Harris, who...
Yeah, he's playing good football.
Yeah, and no one is crying over the spilt milk of Mike Riley leaving right now. They take Trevor Harris at a lower number and friends and some other pieces on that offense. Ellingson looks good. Edmonton looks like they are going to be a problem.
You don't think Mike Riley in that offense would have as good of numbers as Trevor Harris right now?
Ooh.
I'm not saying he would or he wouldn't. I was just asking you.
Interesting.
It's not really a fair question. It's like I'm looking for a hot take because it's not really a fair question. Like, but
I don't know if he'd protect the ball this well
or get it out that quick to you know, which is needed in an offense too. So I don't know. That is a debate.
There's no debate on who the best team has been thus far. It's been the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. There's no debate who the worst team has been thus far. It's been the Toronto Argonauts. And they met up, and it basically turned out the way you thought it would. 48-21 for Winnipeg. And that score...
That was a bad game.
That score is generous because Winnipeg shut it down.
Yes.
After they just started the game with return after return after return and shut it down early. Argos now 0-4 for the first time since 1993. There's people listening to this podcast who weren't even alive. Bombers start 4-0 for the first time since 2003. 350 return yards in the first half for the Bombers.
350 return yards?
Correct.
Wow.
That's 3.5 lengths of the field, basically, on returns. And last week, the Argos threw away a game at the end because of special teams. This week, they basically threw away a game at the beginning because of special teams.
That's disheartening if you're that squad and you know that you got to play pretty good football to win a game, and then you go out and take that type of blow to start the game off it's tough to bounce back from.
Matt Nichols was pretty efficient, 18 of 24, 209 yards, 3 TDs. Should we talk about your boy,
Mac Beasley?
Yeah. I've said this before. I'll say it again. It's tough to watch him play. And people are going to say, what are you talking about? He threw for 388. He had 3 TDs. Yeah, he also had 2 INTs. He also had about 5 plays where he missed guys wide
open. He didn't throw for 388.
What did he throw for?
I don't know. But the 180 yards in the fourth quarter don't count.
Well, that's why if you want a fantasy sleeper, go grab him. Because Macbeth will get you some meaningless yards at the end of a game. But when the chips are down, when it matters, just some of the decisions I don't understand. Forcing it to Darrell Walker when he's double covered, when you have Noel on a check down, an easy first down, don't get it. But then in other situations, second and long, second 11, second and 9. taking the check down when you know you have to push the ball to at least the sticks to get a first down, don't get that either. I don't necessarily see a progression from him getting better from week to week. I don't really understand.
No, I don't either.
What the intent is for the Argos on offense. Like, they leave the locker room, okay, we're trying to do this. We're trying to run the ball on first down, zone read, get it into second and manageable, throw it on second down.
There's no game plan. There's no plan.
I don't philosophically, I don't know.
Well, there's what no trying to do. If you feel like coming into this season, they had Suddy, who they've now released.
Yeah.
They have Rainey, they have Burks, and they had JWJ. The strength of their team is their running backs. So you think that they were going to run the ball. Plus, they had a quarterback who, I don't say young, but a quarterback that you don't want to have to throw the ball 50 times. They, now, because they've been getting, jumping off to such terrible starts and have been behind at the beginning in the first quarter, behind every game, they're now losing the ability to run the ball. And they're having to pass the ball to come back in game. So now, what we thought would be their biggest strength has become something that they can't really utilize. And now they're forced to drop back and throw the ball, which they don't do well, unless it's the fourth quarter and they're down by 30. So that's something else, game plan-wise, it's become a problem.
This next stretch is critical for the Argos, and it's tough. They go to Calgary. They go to Edmonton. I'm assuming they're going to stay in Alberta. And this could be a fine.
Yeah, they're already staying out there now.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. No distractions, no family around, just us together.
There's distractions.
Wow. The stampede is over. Let's really have a mini training camp out here, just us, find ourselves. Then after that, you come home to host Winnipeg, who by then still might be undefeated. If they end up 0-7 by the time the NFL cuts start to sprinkle south,
they're gonna bring in a whole team,
a whole new team.
Go over to Buffalo and take all 40 cuts and just load them on a bus and bring them over.
Might as well
keep Darrell SJ and get and Armani, and I don't want to say get rid of the rest because there's lots of good players and I'm gonna get in trouble because I actually believe there's a lot of good other guys. I'm not gonna name them all, so you know who you are. But how about they're gonna keep 15 of those guys? You know who you are, the 15, and then they're gonna bring a bus load of everyone else and drop them off.
If they don't get it right in this next critical stretch against tough Western competition, the best three teams in the West.
There's actually,
is your challenge if you choose to accept.
I think if you take the bottom 10 guys in this roster and swap them out with 10 new players, I think they have a pretty strong roster. Because there's the top 20 guys in this team are really good football players. That might go without saying, because you can say that about every team, but I just feel like when I look at these guys who I think are ballers on this team, I can look at every level of the team, from the D-line, linebacker, secondary, ballers, not all of them, but there's a couple on each position that I know are real deal ballers. Same thing, receiving core, baller, running back, baller, offensive line. There's two I know that are pretty good. So anyway, going from there, but I guess that's on every team, I guess. But it's gonna be frustrating for those guys. How about that?
They have talent, but they're not talented.
Yeah,
they're not talented enough to overcome some of the coaching blunders that they've had. Some of the just bonehead decisions that their players have made, and the fact that their special teams aren't special because they're not dominant enough on offense or defense where that's okay. We can gift you a missed field goal. We can gift you a dropped field goal attempt. We can gift you 350 return yards in one half of football. So we're playing on a slanted field to start the game, and then by the time we get into the locker room, the game's already over. They're not that good. They basically have to play perfect just to have a shot, and they've played far.
It's the easy story is the special teams coaching is not good enough. That's the easy story. That's the lazy story. Yes, there was a blunder. I agree. And you know, not putting someone back on that on the field goal at the end of the game, that's a blunder. That's like they got somebody back because there was a penalty. But if there wasn't a penalty, they wouldn't have had anybody back there. And that's a major problem from the special team.
After kicking it out of bounds, which is a blunder.
That's not a blunder.
What is it?
That's an executional issue. That's not a coaching mistake. Okay. It's easy to pile on the special team coach. And you could argue that, DJ. Lots of people will. And I've talked to other special teams, people who think there's no way in that situation you squib kick it.
But the decision to not even kick it deep to me is a blunder before we didn't execute.
That's what I mean. But that's what you think. And I think
so that, philosophically, that we could have an argument.
We could argue that. And I think the majority would be on your side and say that it's better to kick it deep. But I'm just saying that, you know, that was what they chose to do. And I think if you kick a good squib kick there and pin them and no chance for a return, I think you're not talking about that anymore. But they didn't. Anyway, that's up for debate.
But
other than that, then why else is everyone just talks about the special team? Someone gets out of their lane for a kick return. You know, somebody, doesn't. Anyway, there's execution.
But I think we're talking about the same thing because you said you take out the bottom 10 of this roster, bottom 15, swap it out for different guys. They're a different football team. Well, who is often playing on your teams, the bottom third of your roster?
Yeah, good point.
And when you look at their depth and when you look at their Canadians, they're just not good enough. They're not. And that's partially why their teams suck, because that's your depth and your Canadians.
Amen. Church to that. You're exactly right. Yeah.
Like, who's their best Canadian?
Sean McEwen is one of them, but he's an offensive lineman. Levi Noel is a damn good special team player.
He is?
Very, yeah, very, very good. So, but yeah.
Yeah, he is. He's also their, like, second leading receiver at this point.
which
is somewhat of a problem. I think when you compare their Canadians to other teams in the league.
We just asked who their Canadians were, and it was a pause. We could fire some off, but yeah, I agree. I think their Canadian talent would be at the bottom of the league.
Long road back for the Argos, but they could shock the world.
What about this week? What about this week's matchups intrigues you most? Mine, I think, is the Montreal Edmonton game. I really want to see what these Owls can do, and they're at home. So you got Edmonton coming in. Edmonton, who is what if Montreal beats Edmonton right now? What if Montreal at home coming in, the mighty Eskimos come in and Montreal beat? I can't wait to see that game.
The Joe Mack era begins.
The what era?
The Joe Mack era.
Come on, DJ.
We're
not gonna do that, DJ.
Begins. You know what? I'm actually looking for the last game of the weekend.
What?
BC at Saskatchewan.
Why do you care about that game?
Because
that's the worst game of the weekend.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. And these are two teams that are pretty active in free agency. Two teams with new head coaches.
That's the Manny Solly Bowl.
It is.
Remember we had Manny in the pod when he first signed with Sask? We were so excited for this game. We had July 20th circle.
Give me the quote.
Oh, I don't have a quote on me, but do you have it?
About the brim of the hat, remember?
Oh, fire it up. What did Manny say when he first signed with the Riders and he was going back? And he circled this date, July 20th. What did he say?
His goal is to make him straighten up that hat, straighten up the brim of that hat. So I still have it circled because we've talked about the Lions' struggles.
I really want Manny to play that game. I don't think he's going to, but
I want them both to play that game. We've talked about the Lions' struggles, but quite as kept the Riders – have struggled of late as well. They haven't been blown out, but it still hasn't been good. I'm circling that game because desperate times call for desperate measures, and there is going to be maybe some knee-jerk reaction from the team that loses. Those are two teams who came in with Grey Cup aspirations. And the season, it's not even August yet, and the season is quickly getting away from both of them.
Edmonton, Ottawa, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Montreal.
The best actual game, if you could only watch one.
It's the Edmonton-Montreal game.
No, it's...
Which one do you think? Come on, DJ. There's not even a question. with the intrigue of what Montreal is going to do against the Edmonton team that's rolling and Montreal's at home. Come on, man. If it was an actual game, you think it's better than that? It's not even close.
Ottawa, Winnipeg? No?
It's not better than that. No, why? Winnipeg's rolling. Ottawa's looked terrible.
See if Winnipeg stays undefeated.
Okay.
Well, we should ask.
You want a side bet on that? They're at home against Ottawa. You want a side bet if they're going to stay undefeated? I could answer that for you if you'd like me to. Vegas would probably tell you that
I think
there's seven or eight points that would dictate they'll remain undefeated.
I believe they stay undefeated. I believe next week at Hamilton is when the streak ends.
You want to go to the game, Deej?
Next week in Hamilton?
Yeah.
Not really.
Thanks. See, I reach out and extend an olive branch to you, hang out, and be buddies outside of work, and you see how fast you turn me down?
Listen, I'm moving.
That's embarrassing.
I've got priorities.
I'm embarrassed.
I will be watching it partially from a sport clips as I get cleaned up, and partially from my man cave, which I'm looking to make half as good as yours. We should ask our next guest what the game of the week is. We should catch up with the homie who's probably the best Canadian in the league. Am I going too far to say that? Why don't we holler at Andrew Harris next on the Waggle? From the pros in the major leagues to the weekend warriors on neighborhood gridirons, athletes are at risk of injury, and the knee is one of the body's most vulnerable joints. Surprisingly, the repetition of certain daily movements can be just as damaging to your knee joints. Squatting and kneeling are both common risk factors for osteoarthritis. Although knee trouble normally starts after age 65, it's not uncommon for younger people to show signs of wear in their cartilage and to begin experiencing symptoms of early onset osteoarthritis, such as pain following exercise or immobility. Because osteoarthritis is a progressive disease that tends to worsen over time, diagnosing and treating it sooner rather than later can be beneficial. Making various lifestyle changes can also help slow the progression of this disease. To learn more about osteoarthritis and find helpful resources to manage this condition, visit kneepainrelief.ca. The information in this podcast about osteoarthritis of the knee is intended for informational purposes only and is in no way intended to substitute for professional medical advice, to contradict medical advice given, or for medical care of any kind.
We mentioned him earlier. We have him here for you now. Pound for pound, for me, the best running back in the CFL, and he just happens to have a Canadian passport. Andrew Harris, thank you, my guy. How are you feeling right now, 4 games into the season?
Well, I'm actually getting a massage at the moment, so I'm feeling real good. But yeah, the season's been great. I mean, the team is rolling. You know, obviously, when you're winning, things are great. So, you know, we just got to keep our foot in the gas and keep this momentum up. And, you know, but the season's been going well. And I'm really proud of the guys and how we've handled the adversity and the young guys that have come in on the O-line as well. So it's been a solid state.
That is the life of a professional athlete. You're doing an interview while getting a massage. Literally, you come to work in sweats every day, which is the part that I'm most jealous of. The best perk of not really having a real job but playing a sport for fun as a job would be what?
Well, I actually have another job on the side too, so I don't actually come into work in sweats usually. So I have a sales job on the side, so I'm usually, you know, after I get out of here, I'm on job sites or I'm going to meetings. So I usually, the odd day I'll come in sweats and shorts, but for the most part, you know, I'm usually dressed to go to meetings after practice.
See, now you're just making me feel lazy because I only have one job. And one of them is not being a professional running back. How do you manage to balance the two?
Well, just, you know, just time management, you know, getting my stuff, some stuff done in the morning. And I'm just making the most of my time after I'm done out of here, off the field. You know, obviously doing some multitasking when you can, and you know, just making the most of the moments you do have. And you know, and then I coach my daughter's soccer team as well too, so that's pretty time consuming as well. So yeah, it definitely makes for a hectic day some days, but you know, it's better to be busy than be bored and getting in trouble. So I like it this way.
Kind of. When do you sleep? You coach your daughter's soccer team as well? And for the world, what do you know about soccer? Did you play soccer or are you just coaching it like a football coach?
No, I don't know crap about soccer, but when I first started coaching, it was 5-on-5. And I played hockey, basketball growing up. So a lot of my terminology on like how to attack on offense or, you know, defend on defense is based on, hockey and basketball terminology. And this year we actually went to the bigger field at 8-on-8 now. And I got my wife's brother, who's a soccer guy, to come in and help me out coach and stuff. So, you know, we were up around defeated up until 2 weeks ago. But, it's just a blast to be out there with my daughter and get to spend some time with her and her peers. And, watching them grow as athletes and young women is amazing. So I really enjoy it.
Are you screaming like football coach sayings as a soccer coach? Like, finish to the echo of the whistle. Like, is that you?
I mean, there's definitely some stuff that's transferable. But for the most part, I mean, I don't really do too much screaming. I'm just more like the effort coach, making sure that they're running and, I'm learning as I come along with the saying what not to say. But I must actually got kicked out of the game last year just based on, you know, some bad calls by the ref. So, you know, that aggression comes out sometimes too. So
Go ahead and channel your inner Michael Shea. I would be screaming like, bring your hips through, stuff that like doesn't translate at all.
Yeah.
That version of football, the Canadian version, is all I know. You guys have been playing Canadian football better than anybody. 4-0 start for the first time since 2003. What's the vibe like both in the locker room and in the city right now with the way you guys have started?
Yeah, I think the city's excited. I think, they've been, wanting a great start and, wanting success from this team, for a long time. So they're very excited. And, as far as the group, anytime you're winning, it's always a good vibe and good things going on in the locker room. But, my job as a leader now is basically keep everyone kind of humbled and making sure that we're still working hard and not getting complacent and, still setting that high standard of play, week in and week out, whether it's in the meeting rooms, in the practice field and, how we address the media and just ourselves as a whole. I mean, I've seen teams that have, been hot up the gym and, they start feeling themselves too much and next thing you know, they're not making the playoffs. So, I mean, that kind of stuff can definitely happen and I definitely don't want that to creep in on this team.
You've had some accolades of your own recently. Reached the 8,000 rushing yard club, only the 12th player in CFL history to reach that mark, which speaks to your productivity and your longevity. When you hit that mark, what did you think?
Well, the week before, Porter had said it to me, and I didn't really realize how close I was to that. And, during the game, they had acknowledged it. And, for me, it's a great accomplishment. I'm definitely proud of it. And, you look at that list of guys that are in that, top 12, and it's definitely a great accomplishment. But for me, at this point, it's kind of relevant to me because, I'm not done playing, and I still feel like I have a lot more to give and a lot more to do. So, getting accomplishments like that are great and definitely some pride in it. But again, it's just, gotta just keep pushing on, keep moving and staying hungry. And there's bigger accolades for me and a lot from a team standpoint that I want to, reach and get to hit that goal. And that's the most important thing for me.
You mentioned, the longevity that you've had in your career. And as a running back, you're often scrutinized and you've been scrutinized by two things. First, it was your passport. You're Canadian. You're viewed that way. And now that you've got past that, it's your birth certificate. He's a guy who's in his early 30s now. It's time to look to replace him. Is that something that you're cognizant of, the fact that, everyone's always looking to replace running backs as they age?
Yeah, I mean, that's pro sports. They're always trying to find, the next cheaper, younger player that's going to be the next star. And or the next player that's been in that spot, whatever it may be. But it's just part of the business, and part of that is just that what fuels me and keeps that chip on my shoulder. You're always having to prove someone wrong, whether it be your passport, your position, and then it comes down to your age. And can you still be productive? Can you still do the things that you did when you were younger? And part of that is what fuels the fire and keeps that chip on your shoulder. And whenever you're always having to be, prove yourself and be uncomfortable, I think that makes you a better player and a better person.
We have this weekly segment on CFL.ca by Jeff Creever. It's called weekly, say, three hot topics, a bunch of reporters write in on them. And one of them was about you and keeping you healthy and productive. And the question was, should the Bombers take a load management approach with Andrew Harris a la Kawhi Leonard? If you're being compared to Kawhi, that's obviously respect. But who cares what I think? I want to ask the man himself. Do you feel like you should be managed throughout a season to make sure you're best at the end of the season? Or do you want to be on the field for every down?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the game situations, I definitely want to be out there as you know, as much as everyone else is and with the offense. But I think our training staff here is pretty good with, you know, keeping me out of certain situations based on how I'm feeling. And, you know, as I speak right now, I'm getting work done. So, you know, I got a great staff around me that keep me fresh and keep me, you know, on the field. And, you know, just the support staff around me is, you know, really the, you know, you got to give kudos to them because, you know, they do a great job with that. But at the end of the day, though, it's how you feel and how your body is reacting to, you know, certain games or, you know, certain practices. And, you know, just keeping track of all that stuff and making sure that you're not doing too much is definitely important as you get older in your career. But, yeah, you just got to stay on it and, you know, don't let those little bumps and bruises and nicks, you know, pile up because it just makes, one, getting out of bed harder, but, you know, getting up to play, you know, at a high level is even tougher.
You know, one of the situations that the training staff couldn't help you from was, you know, situation in a game recently where your helmet gets taken off and you're still trucking and somehow there's no penalty on the play. It was a good look for you because you got to show off the hair, got to show off the curl sponge and the fade on the side. But when you're running and you're mid-play and you it's a foreign feeling to have no helmet, what are you thinking? Because to be honest, I would have hook slapped immediately. But you got some more positive yards.
Yeah, I mean, it happened so fast. And I mean, initially, once my helmet was flown off, I was just basically trying to just protect my face. And number 42 from Ottawa there, Williams, he could have really came down and given me a good pop. And, you know, he definitely got up a little bit. So definitely respect him for that and thank him for that. But, yeah, I mean, those kind of things happen in the game. And, you know, the play is supposed to be blown dead right then and there. And for whatever reason, they didn't see it. So, you know, it's kind of hard just to slide in the middle of the hole. You know, it could be even worse for you. You know, because there's so many big bodies, you know, all around you. But, you know, it was one of those things where very happy that I was able to get out unscathed. And I had a little bit of a mark on my forehead, but that was it.
The thing I love about your story is your path is not linear. It's not the same path that most guys get to the league, play junior. What is it about the way that you got to where you are now that has helped you be in the position to be successful as a pro?
Honestly, I just think I've always been fighting, you know, fighting for an opportunity, fighting for respect, fighting for, you know, just this kind of my upbringing has been. I think I've always been just in a situation where I always had to prove myself and work hard for things. And, you know, now that I'm at this point now and even, you know, getting my opportunity with the Lions, you know, they had me at safety, they had me at slot back, had me as a returner. And, you know, at that point in time, I would just would have done anything to get on the field to make an impact play. And, you know, I still feel that way, you know, in my career now. You know, there's times where I'm asked to block more, or catch more, or run more, or whatever it may be, or just be, you know, more of a leader and bringing up people up and making sure everyone's on the same page. So, you know, for me now, it's still the same thing. I just want to be an impact player on no matter what I'm being asked of and, you know, just contributing that way.
Yeah, I forgot you started playing a little bit of safety, playing on the wrong side of the field. So you came over to the good guys. It reminds me of a situation similar to Sean Thomas Erlington, a guy who, you know, Jim Jones saw him, gave him an opportunity. Originally was in the slot, then he earned more respect, and then, you know, he blows up and his feature back, and now the guys behind him, Malik Irons, your homie Anthony Coombs, are getting a chance as Canadians now that he's injured. They haven't made that an American position as soon as the starter as a Canadian went down. Do you notice that your success is making it more in vogue around the league for people to take a real good look at Canadians as running backs, not just as teamers or fullbacks, but as feature guys who can run the rock?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can take credit for all of that because, you know, back in, you know, 2011, 2010, you know, that was kind of the emergence of John Cornish and Jerome Messam and, and myself. So at a time, you know, I think it was 2012, I was a starter for DC. Messing was in Edmonton, and John was at Calgary. So there's three guys at that time, Canadians, as starters. So I definitely think that you know, open you know, other teams' eyes and gym's eyes is, to say, okay, these guys can play and be impact players. And, you know, we were, you know, near the tops of the rushing, you know, that year, and as three Canadians. And, you know, that was probably, you know, the most significant time in recent where, you know, Canadian running backs were making, you know, a statement that way. And I think that, you know, it's kind of just been filtered through. And, you know, obviously a Messam and Cornish aren't playing anymore, but, you know, just myself and being able to still be in the lineups and doing these things, and it gives guys opportunities, which is great.
Well, I had a disagreement with Davis. I described your offense as explosive, and he didn't like that terminology. But I said, pretty much, if you did a 4x4 relay with any offense, I think the Blue Bombers win. Who's the fastest guy on your team?
We got some guys that can blaze. I mean, Lucky Whitehead is definitely up there. Chris Drebler is ridiculously fast and powerful. I mean, you got Charles Nelson. You got Kenneth. He's going to be in the lineup this year as a returner. He's like a hurdle. He's like a 4x1 hurdle guy in college. Yeah, and then, I mean, on our defense, you got, you know, all our DBs can fly too. So, we got explosive players on offense, and you know, it's great to be part of that. You know, and I think about even our offense. Dembski too. I mean, Dembski's fast as well too. So it's funny, like, even as a running back, you know, I'm probably like the fifth or sixth fastest guy on offense. You know, so I feel like the old slow guy out there. But it's just great to have fast guys all around you.
I was waiting for you to say Dembski. I was hoping you weren't going to forget him. What's going on in Winnipeg and Manitoba specifically, the way you guys are breeding football players, but specifically skill position guys like no other?
Yeah, I don't know. It's been a great run of players coming out, you know, especially from our school in general. It's Oak Park. There's another guy coming out in a couple of years, and Ryland Kelly, he's going to be a really great player at a high school right now. But yeah, they've just been, every couple of years, there's been, you know, one or two guys that have been able to, you know, be an impact player in high school and continue that to build their college careers. And I mean, I don't think there's anything in particular, but it's been nice to see it. We have a track coach here, and his name is Glenn Bruce, and he calls Winnipeg Running Back Nation, because of the emergence of all the guys that have kind of come out. But, you know, it's just, you know, a lot of the guys are hard workers and, you know, blue-collar guys. And, you know, that's definitely a trend that I would say you have for sure.
I love that you shouted out Oak Park. No love for Maples. It's all Oak Park. Okay. If you put together a team provincially of guys in the league, is Manitoba winning?
I don't know. I just think on sheer numbers, you know, it'd be tough to compare it to, you know, Ontario, or, you know, I mean, Ontario's probably got the most guys in general, but there's definitely some skill players, you know, across Canada, and it's just great to see the development. And, you know, when I first came to this league, you know, typically, yeah, Canadians are the O-line, and, you know, you have a D-line and maybe like a safety, and there's just more and more receiver, running back. You know, we've seen some linebackers playing now, and you know, it's just nice to see that there's some more skilled players, you know, just across the board that are Canadian making impact plays. So, I mean, I'm just proud of that, and happy that you know, the awareness of that.
Well, you're on the top of the list, my guy, and you're helping to usher in a new era of Canadian players in the CFL that aren't just lunch pail guys, aren't just teamers, but are impact players making splash plays all over the field. So, thank you for that, and thank you for this.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
So that is Andrew Harris, again, for me, regardless of nationality, regardless of style, pound for pound, the best running back in the league, because he does it all. He runs the ball, he blocks, he protects, and he catches it out of the backfield, plays hurt, plays well, even plays well in the postseason. We'll see how far the Bombers go in the postseason. Great start so far, 4-0. Let us know. What do you think? What province would win in a provincial battle between CFL players, and who for you is the best Canadian in the league. Hit us up on Twitter. You know how to get at me and Davis.